Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Alex, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, thanks, Michael. The pleasure is all mine.
Great. Great. Great to have you on the air with us.
Thank you very much.
Alex, tell me about food and spiritual practice.
Food and spiritual practice. Well, let's see, where to begin? There's lots of places that
yes.
I can begin. Why don't we begin in the kitchen?
Great.
That hotbed of spiritual practice.
Literally.
It is. It literally. Yeah, it's the one place where whatever you do is really on display for all to see.
Yes.
And there's immediate feedback on that.
Yes, so and that's a blessing, isn't it?
It is. It really is. There's no place to hide. The food speaks for itself. and so, yeah, any new cook in the kitchen will testify to the fact that it's a real training opportunity.
Yes. Yes. Great. So it starts in the kitchen.
It does.
And it's a great opportunity to,
I project,
see how we do everything.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we talk about working meditation as something like, we're looking to pay attention to see how it is that we do things, how we get pulled off into distraction.
Yes.
And at the same time, we know we're not trying to accomplish anything. And but we do want to get the meal out on the table. So it's a really interesting koan, you know, how am I going to stay focused without my primary concern being getting something done, but at the same time, getting something done.
Yes. It's a great koan, isn't it?
Yeah, it
to,
is.
I don't know if balance is the right word.
Yes.
But to see both of those possibilities, that there's this task that you want to accomplish, and although you want to accomplish it, and that's important,
what's really
valuable is seeing what we bring to that.
Exactly, exactly. So staying present. And staying present doesn't mean chopping carrots, you know, very slowly. You know, being present is doing the task at hand at the speed that's needed to be done. So, you know, I kind of like to think about it as like, the basketball player needs to be present, and he needs to move, he or she needs to move at a very particular speed.
Yes.
But
yes.
Anyway, we wanted to talk about food too. So the one thing that comes to my mind about that is that we pay very close attention to what it is that we put out to eat. And we want to create something very nutritious and high in protein and overall good for you. And they're low in fat as well. And so there are several things that you need to consider as you're doing that. So you need to know information. So how much fat is in, say, nuts, or how much protein is in such and such. And you're also taking consideration how much things cost. And so it's a fine balance looking for what is in keeping with what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, what came to mind as you were talking is what is most compassionate for all?
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, it's seeking the middle way with it too, you know. So, there's this really wonderful thing that's very expensive at the same time. So we're also looking to see what is the way you put it, what is most compassionate for all?
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it's definitely my experience that I have the sense that a lot of care and attention and mindfulness went into, you know, what's on the menu, how it was prepared,
exactly.
And I suspect for someone first coming on retreat, first coming to the monastery, that is really a powerful experience to project how much kindness and attention and care has gone into that.
Yeah. That when you said that, I'm just thinking of all the people who come to say there's nothing wrong with you retreats,
yeah.
And they may not necessarily do spiritual practice on their own. A lot of folks actually are just off the street. They've read there's nothing wrong with you, and that's pretty much the extent of their spiritual training. And and here they are. They're coming to a monastery that has vegetarian food. Oh my.
Yeah.
And so who knows what they're actually expecting. But our evaluations that folks write at the end of the retreat very much point to the fact that they're blown away by what's possible with vegetarian food, and that it's not just some gruel in a pot with some more gruel on the side.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And what comes up for me as you're talking is really conditioning will want to make that kind of menu into deprivation and not enough.
Yeah, oh my gosh, they're having dessert.
And for me, it's a real blessing to have only that opportunity to eat what's given to me while I'm at the monastery.
That's right.
To have the other distractions that are available to me when I'm at home, which is where it's very easy to find high fat, high sugar, all of those things that in the long run I can feel in my body don't take me to the places I want to go.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that what it's providing for folks as they stay here and, you know, during a retreat is that all this kind of attention to making sure that it's low fat, delicious, high in protein and nutrition, and that they end up leaving feeling lighter than they first came.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, perhaps literally and figuratively.
Exactly. That's right, spiritually and physically, emotionally, and all those other leaves.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's really a nice way to put it, that what the food supports us in doing or being is being lighter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and so, there's all the care and attention that goes into it, and that includes the presentation, too. There's a whole lot of care that goes into that as well, making sure that everything looks as appealing as it tastes. And so there's great care that's put into that. We have these wonderful pottery dishes and platters and things like that someone in our Sangha donates to us. And folks that come to the monastery will see their own silverware, not silverware, but their dishware, is all of the same kind of style and design by that same person. So it's all very interconnected. You know, it's the food comes from our garden for a lot of the sake. And so we had tomatoes coming out of the garden this year, a little bit late, but they showed up, and so we've been having those. And people who have been coming to retreat are really enjoying our homemade applesauce that was also made from the tree that produced them in our garden. And so just so many neat little things like that, touches that people have commented on while they've stayed here. You know, they've put on their evaluation that they've enjoyed so much that it says homemade applesauce from our own trees. So.
Yes, yes, that's great. And you mentioned how it all feels interconnected. And I don't know if this is what you're pointing at, but to me, every aspect of the monastery kind of enhances and reinforces all the other aspects.
Yes.
So there's the food and the silence and the custody of the eyes and the beautiful grounds and the beautiful meditation hall. And I don't know if you've had this experience, but sometimes when I have the food, I feel like I'm really just having the icing on the cake. It's like,
no,
wow, this food is so wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And it's just the whole, it's like the whole package comes together via lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Like the whole environment is, you know, and then you go out and sit with your food by the water feature that the monks all put together several years ago, and that's all beautiful with the, you know, this little waterfall and there's just, as you're saying that, I just see that everything, like you said, is just a part of the experience that people have when they come here. You know, that the silence and coming in with, you know, we're on 50 or 60 acres of land, but you know, it's mostly wooded, and gosh, it's just about as beautiful as it gets here.
It is very beautiful. Very beautiful. Having been there last week, I can attest that it's still beautiful.
Uh-huh. The flowers are still at it.
Yes.
Yeah, there we have some flowers in our garden among the vegetables.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Michael. I enjoy talking about this subject. You know that it's very dear to my heart.
Yes. Thank you, Alex.
All right. Thank you. Have a great show.
Okay, we will.
Bye, Michael.
Bye. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Good. You?
I'm great.
Sounds like you're good.
I'm great.
Sounds like you guys had a good week.
We had a great week. I had a great week.
Yeah.
I guess if I had a great week, I'll be projecting that we had a great week.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was fun for me to listen to that because I received in the mail the other day a little book written by someone who is a woman who's a part of our practice. Was, you know, not about our practice necessarily, but it just talking about her journey and the things that she's looked at and overcome and gone through and, you know, how her life has opened up and all of this. And there's a little part in there where she talked about coming to the monastery for the first time. And it was so fun to see that place through somebody else's eyes, through that, you know, beginner's eyes.
Yeah.
And to hear it described. And it was very much like you two were just describing it. You know, it's just so breathtakingly beautiful. And everything is so simple and kind of tidy. And sometimes I think, I don't know if this is true for everybody, but we can forget how extraordinary it is because we become accustomed to it. And yeah, it's just there's that beautiful place again, and beautiful.
Yes, and what
goes on there.
Yes, and what a lucky duck am I that I get to go there.
Exactly. We're very fortunate.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Anybody call us?
Yes. Two people have called us. Let's talk to them.
All right. I want to say one other thing. I'll tell you one other thing that I'm excited about. And that is that the new email class started today. And this is the one that is, we're putting the finishing touches on the sequel to There's Nothing Wrong With You. And this is the email class. And there will be one in February that they have grown out of that book. And it's very, very fun to be in that kind of immediate, direct conversation with folks who are practicing. So it's kind of like the written form of the radio show. And very fun. So if somebody's listening and they are missing the fun, they can join in February. And we're actually doing something that we've never done. So the people who join the class in February, who missed this one, they will be able to go online and read the entire class. And so they'll have all the background that they'll need to go ahead. Because the book, you know, is not going to come out for a little while yet. Even though we're putting the finishing touches on, it takes a long time to go from finishing touches to printed and out there. So
yes. So if you do the second email class, you'll be able to read everything from the first class?
Uh-huh.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and people will be able to do that anyway. You know, this technology stuff is just fabulous.
It's
so as the class is going on, we'll send out some of the responses that people send in, and everything will go up on the web. So people will be able to read it over the weekend or at their leisure or, in a month or whatever. And then if they want to refresh themselves on what we covered before starting the February class, or if they didn't do this class and they want to get up to speed before the February class, there it is. They can go and read it.
It's amazing. As you were talking about new technologies, I was thinking, you know, something like a enlightenment monitor that would, you know, shoot up and down as I'm more enlightened and less enlightened. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like you talk about the, you know, the lobotomy that's going to take out the voices.
Right, right. Is this like a thermometer sort of thing?
Exactly.
Are you here? Are you gone?
How identified am I?
Yeah. Soon, I bet.
Okay, you want to talk to some people?
Sure, that'd be great.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, this is Paul from the Bay Area.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm so excited I get to talk to you today.
Yeah. What's going on?
So I am looking at an old bugaboo of mine that's been there since the beginning of the spiritual practice work. Like, I noticed it at the beginning, and it's still alive and well.
Isn't karma good that way?
Yeah, it's just a gift that keeps giving.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm, I guess looking for a bit of encouragement and guidance on how to take this on, because it's alive and well, especially these days, and I don't like it.
Okay, well, there are a lot of factors right there. What can you be a little specific about what it is?
Oh, I sure can. It's the message that says you're not getting enough done.
Ah.
And a related message is life is passing you by, and you're wasting the amazing opportunities and resources which you have at your fingertips.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I'm guessing that, let me not guess. Let me ask.
Okay.
When do you get these messages? Is this just sort of throughout the day, or is it kind of at the end of the day, or?
I think that there's two parts to that. I would say I hear them most clearly in the afternoons,
uh-huh.
which is my low energy time of the day.
Yeah, that would figure.
However, I would also say that it seems to be an underlying hum. Like, if you've ever done audio recordings and there's a hum in the background,
yeah.
That's part of it.
Uh-huh. It's just kind of a given. It's the we know that that's the case. Now, here's a really big example of that.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's like it's just understood that that's how your life is, and then the voice's job is to point out specific evidence that this is the case, that this is true. It's not like it has to make a case. As soon as it says it, somebody in there is going, I know.
That's a good point. So it's this. It seems like this very believable thing. And, of course, it's a moving target. So if I don't have I'm an independent consultant. So if I don't have any work, then that's evidence. And then if I get work, well, it's not the right kind of work. And then if I get the right kind of work, well, it took so long to get this work. And there's no end to it.
No, there's no end, and there's no winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the of course, as you know, we do so much with mentoring. And this is like the anti-mentor.
Yeah.
Right? So no matter what you do, it's not good enough. No matter how successful you are, it's not successful enough. Whatever you accomplish, you didn't accomplish enough.
Yeah.
So it's there to just constantly tear you down. And of course, it's so important to realize that it comes at you at your lowest point of energy.
Right.
Because that's what it does. You know, that's why people with addiction, I mean, aside from ego addiction and addiction to voices and that sort of thing, substance abuse addictions, have that thing of halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. You never want to get in one of those states, because that's when the voices are going to have the biggest access to you. They're going to talk you into doing something unfortunate, and then, of course, they're going to beat you up afterwards. So, so we can't take that sort of thing personally. We do have to work really hard to support ourselves so that we don't get into that state.
Yeah.
And the voices, of course, are always trying to talk us into that state.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever, so you're a consultant, so you're used to working with people and kind of, I'm guessing, interviewing them and seeing what they need and assisting them in accomplishing things. Is that fair? Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, have you ever interviewed this anti-mentor to find out What are the goals that we're going for here?
Yes, I have.
And can you get a specific list? In other words, tomorrow, how much would be enough work?
Yeah, so the underlying worldview is, and this has a long family history to it, but the underlying worldview is it's a difficult and dangerous world, and if you don't put every ounce of energy into working, then you won't make it. You won't survive.
Uh-huh.
So it's a survival thing, supposedly.
Yeah, so if you do anything that isn't directly related to work, that's the wrong thing to be doing.
Yeah.
So anything you would do to take care of yourself, if you exercised or took time to prepare food for yourself so you don't have an afternoon slump of energy, then those would be seen as negatives.
Right, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, so there's definitely resistance to, you know, working out, eating, sitting.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now this has been going on for a long time. It sounds like you were actually born into this conversation.
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
And so we're just going to fast forward here. So what is the point after all this time of entertaining it?
This is why I called, exactly. So it's that I can tell you the intellectual pieces of it, and I'm trying to go deeper now, right? And say, how do I access this deeper level of buy-in almost?
Mm-hmm. So there's an agreement to be tortured this way that is below your ability to recognize when it's there.
Yeah, it's one of those things like skin, I guess. It's like a deep-seated belief.
You know, this just keeps occurring to me in this conversation. And
yeah.
So I'm going to throw it out to you and just see how.
Please, yes.
It occurs to me that that your best weapon against this is going to be humor. You know, bullies take being laughed at really hard.
Oh, okay.
And so when it arises to that level, you know, when it gets up in the field of, you can hear it. You know what it's saying to you. To just approach it with something along the lines of, oh, surely you can't mean that.
Ah.
Now, you know that is just plain silly. You cannot possibly believe that's true, can you? How could you even say something so silly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes it immediately from you're this, you know, kind of little victimized, you know, 98-pound weakling getting kicked. Sand is being kicked in your face by the.
Yeah.
You're not old enough to remember those things, but anyway, and suddenly you just turn the tables. You know, you're the one poking fun at. You're
right.
The one kicking the sand.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with that.
Yes, and that's going to be key, to have a lot of fun with it. You know, dress it up in outfits. You know, put a big red nose on it.
Yeah, this is a really good point, because if I've gotten to a point where intellectually I'm very clear that this doesn't have a basis in reality,
yep.
Then I'm all set up to turn the tables.
Yep, you are.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me know, okay?
Okay. Fantastic.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks so much.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I wonder if any kids went for Halloween as Voice Busters. We need, next year, we need to get little Voice Buster cartoon outfits.
Oh, yeah.
You think?
I see a big market for
yeah.
Simple.
And in our sizes.
Yes. In big sizes.
Big sizes. We just put them on. Wear them under our clothes. Our superhero outfits, you know, like Clark Kent, just dive into that phone booth and switch into your Voice Busters outfit whenever you need to.
We could start out as one of the, quote, evil voices, and then underneath could be the Mighty Mentor costume.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Very
like
fun.
Mm-hmm. I think Alex will probably be up all night drawing this.
Cutting fabric.
Yeah.
Sure, we have two more callers here.
Mm-hmm.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. This is Carol from the UK.
Hi, Carol.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad.
Good, good.
Yeah, not too good. But since speaking to you last, I've been diagnosed with adrenal exhaustion and underactive thyroid quite severely. And that plays a big part in the depression. That's been causing the depression that I've had for most of my life.
Wow.
And, yeah,
now,
yeah.
Just right there. That is really good news, isn't it?
It is good news.
Yep.
It is. And I'm hopeful, but it's taking a long time to sort out.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm calling you about is, I sort of touched on it last time. It's a dance relationship I have. And it's, I have a lot of trouble with decision making. It's part of the adrenal situation. But basically, my dance partner and I were kind of involved. He's my teacher, but it's quite a toxic relationship, and I suffer a lot of pain through it, feelings of jealousy and insecurity, and we're sort of split up, but still trying to dance together, and I'm finding it incredibly difficult and very painful, and I know at this time I need to be keeping myself very stress-free.
You certainly do.
Yes. And I'm fine, but I don't want to let go of the opportunity of this is a very, very talented, gifted person that's offering to teach me, but at the same time, it is toxic. They don't treat me very well. And going to social events, which we do quite often, is it's excruciating. Because it's a very intimate dance, we do tango, and to see him with other women, it's very, very difficult. So I'm in this dilemma. On the one hand, I feel I should just give it up, but I don't want to let go of this opportunity of learning to be a better dancer.
So.
So. But I don't feel I can do it. I feel I'm asking too much of myself.
Of course you are. Of course you are. Now, let me ask you this. If this winds up killing you,
yeah,
how's that going to be for your dance?
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll just bet you anything that you could find somebody who is perhaps not as gifted to teach you in a relationship that would not be toxic.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
if it took you a year more, 2 years more, to get as good as you could get learning from this guy, so what?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, and it's funny because saying that, it's like I don't even feel like I do want to learn it so much. he's a big part of the picture.
Yeah, and that part of you who is attracted to a toxic relationship and doesn't care if you die in the process.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, is angling for it.
Oh, definitely. There's something that I am attracted to people that I'm going to experience a lot of suffering with.
Yes, we call it self-hate.
Oh, totally. I wanted to say this to you, actually. I say to myself a lot out loud, I hate you.
Wow.
And I've never heard anyone say that. It's either you're this, you're that. But I say, I hate you.
And do you know who that I is and who is the one who is hated?
I think it's the critic hates the one, the pathetic, weak victim.
And so saying, I hate you, makes that person feel strong and powerful, not like that weak little person.
It's a very angry, it's very frustrated, very angry, and through this depression, a lot of it has been very suicidal. I've never actually attempted it, but I just, this angry voice is so angry.
Wants to kill her.
Oh, totally. Totally. It's so, so hostile. So, so angry at me for not getting my life together.
Yes. Well, and that's interesting, isn't it? Because the way you just phrased that, it's clear that you know which one you are. So that voice that says, I hate you, is talking to the you who's now talking to me.
Yes.
And she is identified as the person who doesn't get her life together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is her life.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not, the life doesn't actually belong to that I who hates her.
No. That's kind of an angry observer that wants it a different way.
Maybe wants it a different way. Maybe just wants to run the show.
Or just be nasty.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's certainly attention getting, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, she's calling all the shots. When she starts her nasty stuff, she's the star of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And might we say, to the degree that you haven't gotten your life together, wouldn't she get a lot of the credit for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sick, isn't it?
It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she beats you up, kicks you, calls you names, tries to get you to do things that are really destructive and make you depressed and ruin your health.
Mm-hmm.
And then she blames you for what she's doing.
Yes.
You got to put her out of work. Don't you think?
I do.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. To just really, really devote yourself to losing interest in her, period. What
yeah.
she thinks, what she wants, what she does, what she believes, how she feels. Bye-bye.
So just have some kind of mantra whenever that, because it comes in a lot. So just no thanks or...
Go haunt somebody else's house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, I project, and I think that you really do get it, that you have to choose you.
Yes.
You have to prioritize you and your health. And again, if you want to dance, you need to find, okay, a less talented teacher. Great.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it takes to take care of you, that's the choice you've got to make, or there isn't going to be a you to dance or not dance.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that I don't know if it's that voice, but it comes in and says, but you should be able to handle this.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's quite logical. He doesn't want me. I don't really want him, but I want him to want me. And so I should just be able to bury emotions and just dance.
Uh-huh, yeah. Have you ever heard me do my routine on that?
No.
That's the same voice that tells the alcoholic, well, you should be able to get a job as a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
If you were the right person, you could go in there and not drink. Go ahead, mm-hmm. get the job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much to figure out what the real underlying motivation and desire is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that person, when they take that job as a bartender and they start drinking, of course, will be blamed for the condition they're in.
Yeah.
So the person who's doing all of that talking into never takes any heat for anything. And yet, if that voice would go away and shut up, you would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You would get very clear in a big hurry. That's not good for me. Maybe somewhere down the line I could do that. But right now, no. My health is shot.
Yeah.
I have a chance to get my health back. I have a chance, it sounds like, in fact, maybe get it for the first time.
For the first time in 40 years, actually.
Yeah. I have a chance not to be depressed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm taking that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's pretty clear, isn't it?
It is. It's just, I can hear in my mind, it's been very logical, but there's just been an emotional or a confusion, and
mm-hmm.
that I just wanted to talk to you about it because
oh, yeah.
I value what you say. And,
well, it's karma.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're going up against. That's what so much of that self-hate is. This is who you are. This is who you've been for 40 years. Don't
yeah.
try to change it. Do what I say. Listen mm-hmm. to me, and you will die the same person that you came in for us to create. You know what I mean?
I didn't quite get that.
Well, in other words, the karma comes in, and the focus is on keeping that karma in place, regardless.
Right.
Yeah. And so the pressure from it, not to change, not to realize your potential, not to
mm-hmm.
let go of self-destructive behaviors. It is huge.
Yeah, it's scary.
It really is. Yeah, take everything we've got to go up against it.
Yeah, I grew up with a lot of sort of abuse, and I'm just used to that. I can take a lot of it.
Yeah, it's familiar. It's who
yeah.
you are. It's what you know.
But it makes it, you know, my self-worth, my self-esteem is.
Oh, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you're recognizing, sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, this is where we look at, if this were your sister, if this were your mother, if this were your daughter, if this were your best friend, well, wouldn't say things like, well, you should be able to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You'd be saying, do whatever you need to do. Just take care of yourself, for God.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to live in, huh?
Yeah. The fear is that because I have no focus in my life, that the dance has been the only thing that sort of got me through the last 2 years, that when that goes, I'll have nothing.
Find another place.
Yeah.
To dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are out there.
Yeah.
And they are waiting for you. Because it sounds like you're probably a pretty good dancer. Yeah. Because those voices, that's what they'll tell you. This is it. So a woman who is in a battering situation, an abusive marriage, and she's getting beaten up, what she's being told is, you're lucky to have me.
Yeah.
Nobody else would have you.
Yeah.
That is just simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, she has to get out of that abusive relationship and get her life together, value herself, choose herself, make her own priorities, and then pretty soon, somewhere along the line, she realizes, actually, anybody would be lucky to have me.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is she finally has her.
Yes. Yes, I'm starting to get that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if you have you come and done the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
Not yet.
Well, you might put that on your schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, just everything you can to support yourself.
Yeah.
Find everything, even if it, you know, doesn't meet all the standards. Just anything that's going to help you remember to choose you.
Yeah.
That's the only job. And I'll tell you this thing that I heard, I don't know if there's any truth to it at all, but I've heard that the best thing that you can do for your adrenals is to lie down on the floor for 5 minutes once an hour and relax completely.
Mm-hmm.
Seems manageable.
Yeah, it's sort of what my body keeps making me do.
Yeah, so 5 minutes every hour, just lie down and let gravity have you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, stay in touch, okay?
Don't
go off there and just be on your own with those voices.
No.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
You're most welcome.
Thank
Anytime.
You. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye to you both.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Carol. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Humor. Sherry, I project a lot of dedication and commitment on everyone, and particularly on people who are staying up in the middle of the night to combat the voices.
Just, oh, God. I mean, oh, I just, if I were going to hate anything, I got to tell you, I would just hate those voices. I just wish I could just rip them out of people. So cruel. It's just so cruel.
Yes. And I remember you talking with people, and people will say, hatred? They don't seem so bad.
They're right.
Not and hateful. Then you have the experience.
Yeah. They're not hateful. I mean, they're a little critical or a little judgmental or, yeah, I'm a little hard on myself. No, they're hateful, and they'll kill you if they can.
Yes.
But, yeah, middle of the night.
Big
up to get some support against them. It takes a lot of courage.
Sherry, we have two callers in the queue here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Dennis from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Dennis.
How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm doing all right.
What's going on?
Well, I usually have an evening class, so I never get a chance to call, but it was canceled today at the last minute. And so I made it suddenly came to me to call in.
Very good. You know that, it suddenly came to me. That's the secret to the whole thing. Do you know that?
Yeah, but you know, for me, I think there's something else going on at the same time because I was working on something I like to avoid, And so, the voices would tell me that it was, you know, well, you're just trying to avoid it, and that's why you called in. But
But it's the something told me. It's the, you know, because it could have said a lot of things that you could do to avoid whatever it is. A lot of voices could come in to say, oh, you could go bowling, you could go you could surf the internet, you could, you know, there are a lot of things other than, I think I'll call into a radio show where they're talking about spiritual practice.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah, I mean, I think last time I called, I was working on anxiety, and I'm still kind of working on it, but I kind of switched course a lot. So I was doing something where I just kind of, the kind of thing that you're sort of warning the last caller about, I was kind of shutting out all these other things in my life and just focusing on my work and my one thing, and, you know, everything was really dramatic, and if it didn't work out, you know, everything would be gone, and if it did work out, I'd have everything in the world, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so I kind of stepped back and I said, well, look, this isn't working. I've done this before. So, you know, it's like, it's like strike three or something. So I'll just do something else instead. So I started looking for support from a whole lot of other directions. And, I saw a doctor about some sleeping problems I'd had, and I got some useful stuff from him, including this machine that I sleep with now. And I started seeing a therapist again, and it's been really good for me. And then I started a spiritual practice again, at least. What I've been doing lately is meditating as soon as I can after I wake up.
Very good.
Which is good for me because I'm not a morning person at all. I've never been. It's been, you know, historically a big challenge for me to do anything first thing in the morning. And so I have this experience where I kind of wake up, and the first thing I have is like an anxiety attack. And then, you know, that goes on for like 15 minutes, and then I get out of bed, and then I do like a 10-minute meditation.
Can I interrupt you and ask you about that?
Yeah.
Do you know what brings on the anxiety attack?
I don't know. You know, so what's happened now, I know conditioning has this way of kind of shifting. It's like a whack-a-mole, right? You hit it in one spot, and then it pops up in another. And so I know that I go to bed feeling really anxious, maybe like, you know, three-quarters of the time. And, you know, as I said, I had these sleeping issues, and so when I go to bed, I'm just really exhausted, conditioning and anxiety is at like a fever pitch, and so then I sleep, and then I wake up, and maybe it's just the continuation of it. I don't know.
So do you ever wake up in the night or have a sense that you're having anxious dreams or that sort of thing?
No, I don't usually get that. I don't wake up with nightmares. And sometimes when I do wake up from a noise, say in another apartment or something, I don't feel especially anxious then. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you might be, though, in the morning waking up into something that was producing anxiety, because it sounds like it's kind of, You come to consciousness and there's an anxiety attack. In other words, you're not aware of any, oh God, what is today, or that sort of thing. You're not aware of thoughts that are bringing this on. It's just boom, it's there.
Well, I mean, it could be a little bit of both. Like, I mean, it's like an anxiety attack. I mean, I've looked at it enough that it's kind of like an avalanche. Like one thing will start it. You know, it could be a feeling, it could be just a negative thought or something, and then the body sensation will react, and then it'll go back to a thought, and it'll go back to a body sensation, and then, you know, 5 minutes later, it'll be like a full-blown anxiety attack or something.
So
like
it's just
that.
building.
Yeah, like I wake up, and then I tell them, like, for example, I might say, you know, it's really time for me to get up, I should really get up, and then I'll say, oh, you know, well, it's too bad that you can't get up faster than you're getting up, and so then I'll start feeling anxious, and that's kind of
okay.
Amplifying
it. We just heard the you voice in there. right? Uh-huh. So somebody's talking to you about what you're doing wrong, basically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So at least from what you just described, it says, well, it's too bad you can't get up faster than you are. And then
yeah.
an anxiety that comes with somebody criticizing you about how you're waking up or getting up or whatever. And then
yeah.
it starts bouncing back and forth between the anxiety is there, produces the anxious thoughts produce the sensations.
Yeah, and then you start feeling anxious about the anxiety.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah. Oh,
yeah.
God, I'm going to have an anxiety attack here.
Yeah,
first thing
yeah.
The, yep, I'm right there. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, and then that
I mean,
goes on. You just go through it.
Yeah, well, so what I do is I try doing, you know, deep breathing in bed even before I get up. And that relaxes me a little bit. And then I get up and then sit on the cushion for 10 minutes or however much time I have and then continue.
Okay,
the rest of the
and
day.
When you're doing the deep breathing, are you aware of thoughts going on?
Yeah, that's a really tricky time for me because, I mean, a lot of the time I'm just half asleep, right? And so, you know, things are just kind of passing through.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have a sense that they're not random? In other words, if tomorrow morning, if this happened, would you kind of recognize the sorts of things that pass through?
Kind of. I mean, I think it's more the feeling that passes through. Like, it looks like just generally in life, like, I'm not so troubled by negative thoughts from self-hate or conditioning. It's more like the bodily sensations are really uncomfortable. After I've been sick a couple times since I started sitting, you know, several years ago. And just sitting in bed with a backache where you can't move or having the flu, it's just really, I have this a similar feeling to that. Like, it's just like, there's just this bodily ugh, you know, and it kind of reminds me of that feeling that I get.
Do you feel trapped?
I kind of feel like pressured, like, you know, there's something to do next and you have to take control of it.
And you can't because you're sick, because your back is out, because you have the flu, because whatever. So, again, those feelings, those sensations are building, and there's nothing you can do about them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are all these things associated with it, like my parents being critical when I was younger and... I mean, my parents would just tell me, like, just, you know, I'd be in a lot of states where I had no idea what to do, and they'd just be, like, giving me the message that I have to do something right now, or, you know, they'll be really upset at me or something like that.
So there's all that nervousness about what to do and no idea about what to do. Should
yeah.
be doing something. So you're really nervous because you know you should be doing something, but what that is, you have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, that I have no idea.
Okay. So you want to try an experiment?
Okay.
Right. So tomorrow morning, and for as many mornings as you feel like doing the experiment, when you wake up, you're watching to see what triggers this. What happened right before that first rush of anxious energy that goes probably through your solar plexus and then shoots out into the rest of your body? So you're noticing that, and you're breathing. And as you're breathing, you are saying to yourself, "What would you like to know at that point? Would you like to know that it's okay, that there's nothing going on, that you have all the time you need? There's what would be kind of comforting to you?"
That I have all the time I need.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to say that with each breath and with each inhalation and each exhalation. And what you're not going to do, what you're going to practice not doing, is falling for the, I'm too sleepy to be able to focus on this. Because if you're too sleepy to be able to focus on it, what's happening is you're not too sleepy to let that conditioning go on. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, hold on.
Okay. So, if nothing else, when it starts, if it feels like, you know, you're saying it and then you kind of drift off, okay, sit up a little more so that you are bringing more conscious intention and commitment to staying with the breath, repeating that you have all the time you need, and, you know, you can go from there to whatever, you know, it's okay. You don't need to worry about it. You have all the time you need. Whatever it is that you can get in on inhalation and an exhalation. And you're feeling your body relax. You're staying with the breath, feeling the breath move in your body, feeling the body relax, and saying that to yourself.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And you just, and that's it. You're just watching what happens as you do that.
Uh-huh.
And then after whatever period of time, when it feels like the sensations have calmed down, then you do, you know, your usual routine. Get up, sit for 10 minutes, got your life.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then you're going to miss a class in a couple of 3 weeks so that you can tell me what happened.
Yeah, I'll probably be able to check in sometime later.
Good. Yeah, because I'm very curious to know what happens, because you know, none of this, of course, as I'm sure you know, none of it is random.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is a very specific program that you are being subjected to. Just haven't seen the mechanism of it yet in a way that enables you to change your relationship with it.
Uh huh.
But it's there,
okay.
And you will see it.
Okay. Good. I mean, because I was going to do some other things to provide extra support to myself, too, because I don't control the temperature in my building. So, I mean, sometimes it's just really cold. Other times it's really hot. But, you know, if I did something like set out a sweater next to my bed before I went to bed,
yes,
then it would make the transition to getting up just so much easier.
Yes. There you go. There you go. And that's the kind of intervention that really begins to mess with the mechanics of what's being done to you. It is a parallel to, it occurred to me to call in. It occurred to me that I could put a sweater next to my bed. It occurred to me that that's where the information that you need is, that's how it's getting to you. That's how it's coming to you. Very mm-hmm. different from the voices that talk to you.
Uh-huh.
Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
'Cause that's something I've not really trusted very much in my life, that kind of intuitive knowing
mm-hmm.
or whatever you want to call it.
We have a lot of conditioning that it's not trustworthy.
Yeah, and I mean, just when you're saying that, I just felt a lot of resistance to it.
Yep.
Just like this is too much for me. I won't be able to handle this. It's overwhelming.
Uh-huh. Karma hopes that that's the case.
Yeah.
But I suspect it's not.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I mean, if you asked me like 5-10 years ago, I would probably say, you know, just give in, but...
Not anymore.
No.
Nope, you've seen too much.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Your assignment,
okay.
Sir.
Okay.
Thanks
a lot for the assignment.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I'm eager to hear how it goes.
Good. Take care.
You too. Good night.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Dennis. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Courageous people out there, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. Going up against big stuff.
Big step.
And
gives
you know,
the courage too.
The thing that we can, I think, take comfort in is while each of us has our own version of it, you know, it comes at us in a way that is unique to us, in a sense.
Yes.
But what we're up against is so universal.
Yeah, it really, for me, incredibly helpful. It really simplifies it. And when you talk about it not being personal, that really helps me too.
Yeah, yeah. It knows exactly which buttons to push that get you or that get me.
Yes.
But the process of conditioning, karma, going after buttons to push, toss people into hell, that is something that, as far as I can tell, every human being is dealing with.
Yes. Great cause for compassion.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And for Sangha.
Yes.
You know, to just get with people who get it and where we can support ourselves in realizing what it is, not taking it personally, working on it and getting through it, getting to the other side.
Yes, yes, yes. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break, and then we will be right back.
Thanks.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, the good news and the bad news is that everyone has picked up the phone.
Wow.
So we have four callers in the queue here, and we have 6 minutes.
It's not good odds, is it?
It's not good odds.
All right. Well, we'll get as far as we get. How's that?
Yes. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Valerie from North Dakota.
Hey, Valerie.
Hi.
Is it cold where you are?
We're kind of blessed with some 50s. It feels really good.
Wow.
Right,
kind of balmy, huh?
Yeah, I know what's coming, so everyone knows what's coming, so we're all really thankful for the sunshine that we're getting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what's going on aside from that?
Well, I was calling in to listen, and then the queue was really short, and we ended up on the air, and I think calling in and talking to you has brought up a lot, like a hysterical young child a lot in the past. My childhood was, yes.
Were you able to help her out?
Yeah, I've been there for her a little bit more.
Good for you.
I mean, what really helped was this summer when you sent out a letter that said upset is an act, or you had a big list of what's an act, kind of.
Uh-huh.
And that was like a 1-2 punch along with nothing's wrong and not enough, kind That's what occurred to me, that that's kind of helping the hysteria not be so believable.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way you framed it, you know, if you know that some little child is upset, is hysterical, well, you can take care of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay.
And
you don't have to. Go ahead.
The subpersonality ideas are a little slippery still. I'm still recommitting to making a change for good, or I was this summer and this fall, and now I'm in this new email class, and I'm gonna be in that too. But the subpersonality thing slips around in my head, like there's stupid dust around it still. But I do see the child, the hysterical child, clearer than I have before. And the victim clearer than before.
Yeah, and you know, that approach to me is a really good one. You know, instead of letting conditioned mind figure it out for you, you just let these people appear in your life and then let it kind of dawn on you that, I think that's a subpersonality. In sort of
not in self-hate. No.
Right, and just in an organic kind of a, you know, I bet you if you, and you probably have, thought about subpersonalities of people in your life. You know, with your friends, you can watch them go from being one way to another way to another way to another way.
Yes.
Yeah? And now to them, of course, it probably feels really subtle. To you, it doesn't look subtle at all because, you know, we can make some pretty dramatic changes in the course of a day between personalities. And so just opening up to it in that way, you get more comfortable with the idea. It's okay. You know, everybody has them. Good. Okay. Well, and then one day, you know, you're doing something and it just occurs to you that, wow, that's a subpersonality. And then there's somebody for you to get to know.
Sitting on the cushion, there's someone that believes the stories that come up, the stories of loss and failure. And then there's a young child who wants to check the time. Like, she's scared, and she's believing those stories, and she's wanting to know when it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the movement.
One thing that might be helpful, now, this is not a lifetime approach, okay? But just as an interim, kind of an interim step, if you have time, depending on what your schedule is like, write down when those stories, you know, before you sit down to meditate, just consider the stories that are probably going to come up, because aren't they pretty much the same every time?
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah. So you can jot down, you know, there's the story about that, and there's the story about that, and you know, there's a story about how I'm a failure, and there's a story about, you know, whatever it is. And you just make a little list of those things. Then take that little girl, put her on your lap, put your arms around her, sit down, And when one of those stories comes up, you just say to her, yeah, we know that story. And you just come back to the breath and sitting there with her. Okay, the next story starts. When you catch on that it's going on, you just go, tell her, oh, right, remember we wrote that one down. It's okay. We don't have to worry about that. Come back to the breath and keep sitting.
Sounds like I can do that.
Yeah. And it takes that contest element out of it. You know, it has to be this way. It should be this way. You're not doing it that way. That's what's happening. This shouldn't be, you know, just use the circumstances that are there to help you come back to you, to a place of comfort and kindness. Take care of that little girl. That's all that's ever going to be going on. That's all that's ever necessary.
Sounds good.
Good. Now, don't let those voices talk you into not calling in for another 3 years, okay?
I know. They're pretty, they get me.
I know. They get everybody. That's why we're here. All right. Well, enjoy the sunshine. Take care of yourself and don't be a stranger.
Take care. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's after 6 o'clock.
We got to go, Michael. Maybe those people will call back, huh?
I strongly encourage them and welcome them to call back early next week.
Yeah.
And I want to thank everyone who joined us tonight in whatever form and everyone who will listen to us on the archives. And I'm really grateful for getting a clear source of good information. Just a real blessing.
Yep. We are lucky in our practice.
We are lucky indeed.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.